Welcome to Lord John Lander, the Outlander podcast for Lord John fans, where we talk about all things Outlander, but especially about Jaime and his Sassenach.
And sometimes we talk about Claire, too.
For however long it takes, we'll lead you on a journey so chaotic, you'll question every life choice that led you to be here today. And like the Hotel California, you can check out anytime, but you can never leave.
We may not be the Outlander podcast you wanted, but we will be the Outlander podcast you didn't know you needed.
Now, before we get into it, this is your one and only warning that show and book spoilers are lurking around every corner. We're going to spoil stuff from future seasons, future books, and our own brains.
Remember, if you can't prove our headcanon didn't happen, then we can only assume that it did.
If you make it through the episode in one piece, we'd love to hear from you. Send us your burning questions, wild theories, thick prompts, flattering compliments, or whatever's on your mind. You can contact us on Twitter and Tumblr at Lord John Lander or on our website at lordjohnlander.wordpress.com, where you'll also find our archived episodes, teasers, thick recs, and more.
Hello, welcome to Lord John Lander. We are your hosts. I'm Mistress Pandora. You can call me Pan.
And I'm your co-host, Beth.
And we have a very special guest today. Ash is with us. You will know Ash as Happy Days on Tumblr and AO3. Hello, Ash. Welcome.
Hi, everyone.
So excited to have you here.
I'm excited to be here for the first time John shows up. So I requested this to be like my presence for this one.
Yes. So I'm super excited that Ash is here, and I'm very super excited that we finally get to actually talk about Lord John in real time instead of making shit up as we go. It's gonna be a nice change of pace for us. So this week's episode is 209 Je suis prêt. And it looks like we may have stumbled upon another one of Beth's special interests, because I see something that says history lesson and a whole bunch of bullet points.
Well, you do know, like, so one of my biggest special interests is like the history of typically more like England. Basically because I love the drama of English royals that's gone on for like just ever. Centuries, millennium. So it's very easy for me to slip into Scottish territory. So I kind of thought what I would do over the next couple episodes is give a little history lesson on like, how did we get here? Meaning here being the rising of 45. So I'm going to split it out into different episodes. And because it's, you can't just say like, it's very complicated. You can't just say like, oh, well, somebody did something and that made the Scots mad and they did this, right? It goes way, way back. So the conflict between the English and the Scots can be traced back at least to when Northumbria was one of the like territories in what is now England that eventually became part of the United England. But Northumbria fought against the Scots, the Picts, and the Britons in the late 6th century. So this fighting with between what would become England and what would become Scotland was happening about 350 years before England was actually united under King Æthelstan. Starting with the 6th century, battles rose, you know, here and there over the next 6 centuries. But for a long time, the English were too busy fighting off the Danes to worry about what the Scots were doing. There were skirmishes, but it wasn't, they were more concerned about uniting England and protecting their land from the Danes. So in 1286, Alexander III of Scotland died. And this is really where sort of the big crisis begins. So we're talking on the show 1745. The real conflict here starts in 1286. So the Scots know how to hold a grudge, and rightfully so. Alexander III of Scotland died, and his only heir was his 4-year-old granddaughter, Margaret, who was the maid of Norway. So she had to come back from Norway, and she died on her way back to Scotland, and that created a succession crisis and kind of like a power void that gave England an opportunity to kind of slip in there. So there were actually 13 possible successors, and the Guardians of Scotland at the time asked King Edward I of England to choose a successor. He chose a man named John Balliol. John Balliol was part of a very rich, very powerful family in Scotland at the time, and they had ties to Edward I through some strategic marriages. Since he had all these ties to Edward, it didn't take long for the Scots to be unhappy with him because he showed a lot of deference to Edward. So then in 1295, the Scottish Council of War convened and sent a delegate to France to negotiate with Philip IV. And they signed what was called the Old Alliance. And it basically said that if England invaded France, the Scots would invade England. And then that pissed Edward off, Edward of England, because they made this secret treaty behind his back. And so then he invaded Scotland, defeated the Scots at the Battle of Dunbar. And then that July 1296, Balliol abdicated. And then the next month, Edward I convened an English parliament at Berwick in Scotland, where the Scottish nobles paid homage to him as King of England. So there they're kind of, you know, this is the really kind of coming under English influence, if not direct rule. So then there were a lot of uprisings, invasions of Scotland by Edward, and then invasions of Northern England by the Scots. And this went on for like 10-ish years. And then it all kind of came to a head in February of 1305. There were two surviving claimants to the Scottish throne. One was a man named John Comyn, who was the nephew of John Balliol, who had abdicated as king, but was now serving as a guardian of Scotland. And then another guy named Robert the Bruce. He quarreled with John Comyn, and Robert the Bruce killed John Comyn, and then he was crowned king 5 weeks later. So Comyn was Scottish, and he did lead the Scots in battle against the British, but since he had these ties to Edward I through his marriages, remember he was related to the Balliols, who he was the king for a while. And so in 1306, Edward sent troops to avenge Comyn's death. He did catch Robert the Bruce's troops by surprise and defeated them, but Bruce escaped and went into hiding for about a year. But then Edward I died in 1307, so it was safe for him to come out of hiding. And from 1307 to 1314, Robert the Bruce established his rule in North and West Scotland and captured many English towns and castles in Scotland. So he was aggressively anti-English. And then in 1314, they defeated Edward II's army in the Battle of Bannockburn. And then in 1320, they sent the Declaration of Arbroath to Pope John XXII, asserting Scottish independence. And that is where we will leave off this week.
This is cool. We're getting like multiple stories as we go. Yeah. A history lesson. I don't know that. I don't know how many people are like listening to us to learn things, but I bet they're pleasantly surprised.
I mean, it's interesting, and there's so much like drama and infighting. I mean, this is just really like the very, very basics of it. I mean, you could do the whole podcast season just on this crap, right? Like,
oh, absolutely.
Any of it is so interesting, and the politics and all that at play.
There's a lot. Thanks for that, Beth.
You're welcome. Thank you for letting me. Oh, what's that?
I didn't know. That's like, just with Outlander in general, like, I didn't know anything about, like, until I started watching it, anything about that era in history in that part of the world. So.
Yeah, I didn't know a lot of it either. But again, like I said, I've always liked English history for whatever reason. And so it's a quick hop, skip, and a jump to getting into Scottish history. And for the record, I don't like English history because I'm like, yay, England, you're the best. I like it because of the drama and how awful they were. Like, I love to like, mostly I love the royals because I just love all that infighting and politics and intrigue and stuff. But
it's okay. It's because you're descended from landed gentry. You're allowed to like it.
It's true. I had like two, you know, I have pictures of my ancestral estates and they are now like public gardens. And I think I should probably do something about that.
I promise my ancestors had no estates whatsoever. We're the opposite of whatever landed gentry is.
Anyway, we should probably talk about Outlander.
Yeah, maybe.
Probably. Maybe, I guess. For a little bit. So, just off the bat, one of the things that, like, overall impression of the episode, other than the first 42 minutes, were just, like, painful waiting for John. But Bear McCreary has really outdone himself on the score. For this episode, it's probably my favorite.
I was taking notes and I was like, what? Like, the music is so good in this. And then thinking, like, that's a really interesting part about the show that the books can't do, of course, is like the inclusion of music and how important that is to like setting the tone and the like, and just like displaying the culture of the time and the people that, again, the books can't do.
Yeah, exactly. I love the atmosphere that it creates. It's just a great, it's especially this season is a pretty good score. I think when we get back to Scotland, personally, I like it better. I like the bagpipes.
Well, he scores like battles and war exceptionally well. I mean, he does other stuff well too, but the whole atmosphere for like battles, war, that type of stuff, he just really excels at that.
And bagpipes are perfect for that.
Yes. Gotta have those bagpipes.
This episode also gives us this fantastic Angus / Rupert reunion. And I do mean the slash. And the way they talk about Willie getting married like he died is just hysterical. And you're still not going to convince me that Angus and Rupert aren't fucking.
You get no argument from me. I mean,
no.
It gets cold at night. And, you know, you got to have somebody to warm your bed.
Somebody should write that fic. It's not going to be me. Somebody should write it.
Not it.
I would say it's probably out there, but it really might not be with this. I remember when I showed up to this fandom, I was like, I'm going to read some John and Jamie fic. And there was like 50.
Like, dude, you thought.
I was like, well.
Correction. Going to write some.
Right.
Let me fill this void.
So we have some boot camp moments too going on here.
Yes. Sorry. There's strange noises on my roof and I'm not sure what they are. So it's all good. I was just a little distracted.
Okay. That's fine. You can,
I'm not going to investigate. It's fine. Everything's fine.
You don't feel the need to climb up on your roof?
Nah, I'm good. No, I will not be climbing up onto my roof in my birthday suit to fix a shingle or anything like that. I love parts. One of the parts of this episode that I love is Jamie's and Murta training the men and watching Jamie come into his own as a leader. It's such a great episode to watch his growth and to really see a side of him where he's finally kind of like taking control and learning to trust himself and stand up to Dougal, which we always love to see.
So much.
And Dougal's in full jackass mode.
Oh, God.
Like full on. I mean, the man does a Highland, what do you call it? Oh, my God. A Highland
charge.
In it with his shirt off. He's covered. I mean, it's like Jamie gets more and more just like steady and mature and leader-like. And the more Jamie gets like that, the more Dougal acts out and acts like a complete moron.
Yeah. Oh, he's coming unglued.
Yeah.
I feel like so much of Dougal's personality and like the way he's been in his relationship with Jamie has been to control and to use Jamie. And he's losing his ability to do that pretty much entirely. And so that's just, that takes a really big card away from Dougal's like hand. If he can't control Jamie and can't make him do what he wants, like he even goes to Claire trying to say, well, I can manipulate him through Claire since I'm losing my ability to manipulate him myself, which worked very well.
Has he met Jamie and Claire? I mean, what what did he think was... I mean, what a moron.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I think, too, he, besides just the Jamie aspect of it, he's been building up to this rising for years, and he always envisioned himself as a leader in the rising. Mm-hmm. Colm cut the legs out from under him by not involving the Mackenzies officially. So now he is at the mercy of being under, you know, having to go with a different clan to fight and be under the rule of his nephew while doing so. And that's a pretty big ego hit for a guy like Dougal. Oh, yeah. Like, whoa.
That's some humble pie that he is not prepared to choke down.
No.
It's a great lesson for Dougal, though, in the difference between rank and authority. Mm-hmm. Like Ash was alluding to, he's used to having the rank and by proxy the authority over Jamie, because if they're together, they've been on Mackenzie land. Dougal has been speaking for Colm, and Jamie's oath of obedience was to Colm. And it does not apply here. Because no. Dougal is here behind Colm's back. They're not on Mackenzie land. Jamie owes him nothing.
Well, and Colm and Dougal are all but estranged at this point.
Oh, yeah.
So he doesn't have really any power.
So maybe it's kind of like Dougal is trying to get some sense of power back, and that's why he feels like press ganging people from their farms is the way to go.
Oh, my God. He's such a loser.
God, that everyone left. And I was like, when he's like, you guys can go, and they all leave, I forgot, and I laughed so hard. It was a good moment.
That's a good moment.
It's like, they all want to be here. And like they don't look like they do.
Oh, my God. And Jamie is just so at the end of his, like, he's literally only been with Dougal for like a day or two, and he is like already at the end of his freaking rope with this guy.
I'm so sick of him.
He's just like, not this again. I also thought it was interesting that Dougal, when he did bring those men, the conscripted men, and he and Jamie were arguing about it, he said, we can make them believe. I thought it was interesting because Jamie doesn't really even believe. Like, right. He wants to save Scotland, and he doesn't like English rule. But, like, he's never been, like, he's never had, like, the Jacobite heart. You know what I mean? I don't think he believes, and especially after knowing Bonnie Prince Charlie, he doesn't believe that that is the road to get there. But he's here, and he's going to do what he needs. But it's kind of ironic that he's giving this speech about how you can't make them fight unless they believe in it. But here's Jamie not really believing in it.
No, he doesn't believe in it, but he believes in trying really hard to live through it.
Yes, yes.
So there's that. And I kind of got the sense that Dougal, when he talks about making them believe, I get the sense that he was trying to weasel his way into doing that bullshit from Rent, where he's ripping Jamie's shirt off at night to show his scars. That's so disgusting. Mm-hmm. And I love that Jamie's like, nope, done. We're not having it.
You know what's interesting about that, though? Because later in the episode, when Jamie takes a whipping himself, I thought,
I always thought that was just kind of weird. Like, I get what he's doing. I get that he's, like, trying to show he's taking responsibility. But I was like, it also seems kind of weird. And I wonder now, since you just said that about Dougal wanting to put on another theatric show, if that was part of Jamie taking back some of his agency and just he chooses when everybody sees his scars and so he has to take his shirt off to take that punishment.
Yeah. I mean, since we brought it up, let's skip right to it because I had thoughts. I didn't write them down, but I had thoughts. So you put a note in our doc, why does Jamie have himself whipped and not Dougal? And I have a list of reasons and some of them make sense and most of them don't, but that's okay. It's Jamie. Does nothing make sense? So like you said, it's a way he gets to choose on his terms to show his scars. It's a fast way to show that he has a lot of significantly severe life experience in a very quick way in front of his men. So if there's anyone left thinking, who's this young kid? And he, you know, he's not old enough to lead. He has no idea what he's doing. Maybe he does. There's also the aspect that for Jamie and Dougal, so consider that these are men who grew up on corporal punishment and viewing that as justice. Jamie is denying Dougal that justice by not having him whipped. And I use the word whipped lightly. It was a belt. It's not like it wasn't an actual whip, but.
Right. Yeah.
That's interesting because I read just before we did this, I read this. It was just the scene from Dragonfly and Amber where John and Jamie meet in the books. I read the book version. And one of the things that I always love this, the scene where Jamie says to Claire, like he had to threaten John's life in order to like save his pride. And then Claire's like, I don't understand men. That's really weird. But
valid.
But I feel same, Claire, same.
But I feel like that kind of relates to that in the sense of, you know, he was giving a punishment in a sense to John because that showed like, hey, you're like he said, you're someone worth killing. And it's like if Dougal isn't even worth the punishment, that's part of what should happen to him, then, you know, I just think those things, that's kind of interesting because it relates to how Jamie weirdly shows John respect in the books.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was also thinking too, maybe Jamie realized that he can only push Dougal so far and he's trying to slow play this a little. He wants to keep Dougal around because he is very effective at what he can do. And he is sort of like, I could have him lashed now, but then what's the fallout going to be to that? Right. And we know Jamie's very calculating. So I do wonder if there was some aspect of that in there. Like if lashing Dougal was just going to like make everybody's lives freaking miserable. And so part of him just didn't even want to participate in that. But I also like adding on to that your point, Ash, that it wasn't worth it. Dougal's just not worth it.
John's worth it though. My voice cracked because I'm very sick, but that's he just automatically likes John so much, and especially in the books you can see it more than the show, and it just makes me so happy.
They just have this respect for each other
from get-go.
Yeah, from the first time they meet, like Jamie's kind of just like, wow, this kid, you know, he's got some cojones on him. Like, this is, you know, and they just, yeah, they can't help but go back to this, like, homeostasis of, I said homeo, haha, homeostasis of respecting each other. And you see that theme, like, throughout the series, right? Anytime they're, like, mad at each other or have fallen out or whatever, they just can't help but go back to that way of just both respecting each other.
And something I noticed different in the book, which I mentioned to Pan before we started this, and because I didn't remember it happened like this, but in the books, Jamie tells John right away that Claire is his wife. and not.
Yes.
But in the show, he tells him at Ardsmuir all those years later. And yeah. I thought that was interesting because it's like, it seems like Jamie does respect him and kind of weirdly doesn't want this kid to think of him as that sort of person. Like, especially after, like, once it's over, he's gotten the information and he has said all these bad things about Jamie. And it just made me think, didn't want him to go away from that thing thinking that he was a rapist after everything.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because I actually, in one of my fics that I still have to finish one chapter of, I actually used that, the book version, to kind of like create, because it's like a throuple fic, and I kind of used that to like create this whole like, you know, John saw Claire's breasts popping out and like saw their he knows he's been sort of like, you know, enchanted or haunted by her like his whole life or whatever. And I kind of forgot about that because then I made a note in in the notes here that that it's no wonder John is just like kind of like completely gone for Jamie and also kind of confused sexually about Claire for so long, because he basically sat there and watched their freaky role play like at a very impressionable age.
I did not think of it like that, but that is very accurate,
because they are into it, those two, like,
well, especially in the books. I was like, this is so much more graphic than in the show. Like, the description of the book, I'm like, what? She's, like, half naked. I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, he, like, rips her, like, top down and, like, her breasts are out in front of, and they're not alone either. No, there's, like, the entire camp's there.
It's crazy, because, like, in the show, so it's interesting to see that difference, too. In the show, Claire comes up with the idea. Like, she initiates the whole concept in the show, but that is not what happens in the book, because Jamie like grabs her and she's like, I didn't realize he was talking to me at first.
She
goes with it, but like she has no idea what's going on, and then she's mad at him afterwards, except for then she's like, would you rather me like kill the kid? And it's just, it's interesting to me from a John Claire perspective, because I love John and Claire, like,
yeah, me too.
And so like their relationship, and it started out with them trying to save each other, and I just think that that's because in the books, John sees him with Claire, and then of course he also like tries to, like, he hears an English woman in the camp, and with Jamie, and then later, of course, he tries to save her from what Jamie threatens to do, and then she's trying, you know, and then in the show more than in the book, but like she's trying to be like, I don't want them to actually hurt this kid, so I'm gonna come up with something that keeps him from hurting this kid. So it's just interesting that that's how their relationship started, was with them trying to save each other.
Yeah, show Claire tends to give more shits about what happens to other people than book Claire.
That's a true statement.
I like that you brought that up, though, that Jamie initiated it in the book, because I didn't go back and read, and I had forgotten about that. Because one of my points later on in my sort of point counterpoint, I think that Claire's PTSD is like an unnecessary plot point. This should be a Jamie-centric episode. It should be about Jamie's growth as a leader, and it's, you know, we should be seeing all of those things that Jamie's doing, like the stuff that we see, but also like, why couldn't Jamie have been the one to initiate that in front of John, to show, you know, his calculations and things like that. The PTSD is just such a distracting attempt to keep the story centered on Claire. I understand she's the protagonist, but it is okay if she fades into the background sometimes. And they really took like half of this episode and tried to center it on Claire when it shouldn't have been. This really should have been a Jamie-centric episode. And I don't even blame Claire for this one, because, you know, this is all the writers, like, messing this up. And the fact that she gets over it in, like, one episode just shows you how meaningless it was.
I like the concept of, because I think it she would probably have, it would be bringing up those things, but I agree that like in the listening to you say that, like in the context of this episode, this episode should have been about Jamie. If they wanted to do, you know, Claire having PTSD, it could have been something that spans throughout like the entirety of her, this new war, reflecting the one that she dealt with in the past, because I do think that that's somewhat interesting. Just like I can't, you know, she has to go back to war after probably not expecting to ever do that. And then, you know, so I do think, but it did feel like two separate episodes kind of put together.
Not that just from a PTSD is a real thing perspective, not that boot camp flashbacks aren't valid as hell, but it's so out of character for her. Like, it just doesn't continue. Like you said, it resolves itself. That's not how PTSD works, for one.
Right.
Right.
I feel like if it would have continued on and it just been sort of like a part of the story they wanted to tell for that half of the season, or that's this part of the season, like she is dealing the entire time with the fact that she's already been through something like this and it was horrifying, but it just didn't really fit into what they were.
Yeah.
What they were doing, and how, like, kind of sometimes they try to make, I think, whether it's the show or Diane or whatever, like, they try to make her seem like this fake strong in a sense, where she tends to, like, not feel emotions always in the same, like, that you'd expect, like, that the fake, like, strong, I don't know how to describe it exactly, but where it doesn't really feel like the strength isn't coming from complexity, it's coming from, like, from experiencing things so differently than probably most people would. So it makes you seem like special.
Yeah. Just the way that they did it in this episode, it could have been a really good storyline. It could have been done really well, but it just feels to me like it was a half-assed attempt to give Claire some character depth. And so it just came out as melodrama.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like fear of not having her have her own storyline in this episode. Like, it's okay, you know? And then I thought, well, it's really funny how they were like afraid to take the attention off of Claire for even one episode during season two. And then they made it like such a huge overcorrection in season four. Like, they're like, oh, we'll just not show Jamie and Claire at all sometimes.
This episode really stands out because, you know, it's the episode where Jamie meets the next love of his life. And she could have the writers did her so dirty on this one. It was not good.
Yeah, we could have easily had like an extended John Jamie thing. Although I do understand that John is under 8. Actually, you know, he's only 15 or 16 at this time. So we don't want it to go too far, but we could have had some more like glances and, you know, like extended out like the sexual tension a little bit and stuff. And that could have just replaced the PTSD.
It could have gone for like, in the books, there's a scene following the John scene where Claire and Jamie talk about what just happened with John. And I think that they could have included that instead, because that's one of my favorite scenes. And I think it really does reflect eventually what John and Jamie's relationship has, even just as friends or whatever, just the enormous respect they have for each other and the way they kind of understand each other, which is something, you know, literally Claire says, like, I don't understand. And he says to Claire, you don't have to understand. But it's like John is someone who does understand in a way that I don't think Claire always does. And they just like have this unspoken understanding of what the intentions of the other person.
John gives Jamie something that Claire can't. And that's beautiful.
You know, it occurred to me, thinking about how much time John spent in Aberdeen, and if we're going with he probably picked up Doric, he probably could have talked his way out of this if he'd slipped it to Doric. I'm just saying. I love that little disaster man.
You can't tell me he spent all that time in Aberdeen and didn't pick up Doric. Like, why do we never talk about, not, well, we talk about it, but I mean, like,
we do.
Come on, Diana. Come on. Work with us here. Like, you can't tell us that he didn't pick it up. He picks up languages not as well as Jamie, but pretty darn easily.
Pretty darn well. Did you guys catch when when they were kind of patting him down, they pulled a letter out of John's shirt and said it's addressed to a British officer. Do we think that's Hector or Hal?
I immediately was like, Hector, but I don't know if that's accurate. I just wanted it to be accurate. So I was just like, Hector.
I think that I kind of assumed that John was acting as a messenger and it was something that he was carrying from somebody else to Hal.
It's possible. He was a scout. So, I mean, he was, you know, glorified gopher. But either way, I like the Hector idea. I think I prefer that it's Hector. Screw Hal.
Was he an officer?
He was. He was a lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
He was also 21, speaking of underage. Just saying. It does not bother me in the slightest in this case. It's fiction.
He was 16, too. So, I mean, that was a couple years ago, but Jamie was still an adult man.
Yeah.
They have some wild rules in this world.
Yeah. We just don't talk about the ages. Like that's just like the thing with the Outlander, especially on the show. Like on the show, they're just like, ignore the ages, please. We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah. The math never maths.
It is also interesting. Like this is the moment that also like will save Jamie's life as well. Like if it wasn't for this moment, there's no rest of Outlander because he dies with everyone else.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. It's a big moment.
It's like the beginning of John saving the Frasers' asses repeatedly for their entire lives. Like they would not be alive so many times over if it weren't for John.
Like little did John know this would be the start of his chronic migraines.
Right. It's also like this is a moment where he's meeting his future wife. He doesn't also recognize that.
I know.
And his future baby daddy.
I was also thinking about what we talked about last week, Pan, with Willie and him. Was it last week or was the one that was just on this past week about Willie being like kind of like John teaching him to be heavy footed so that he doesn't sneak up on John and surprise him. So I was thinking a lot about that as John and Jamie were kind of, you know, fighting when he came up upon Jamie taking a pish.
you can just imagine that every time William snuck up on John, whether it was on purpose or an accident, he's having flashbacks to this. He's like, he's seeing Nom, right? Like it's like, this is not good.
We gotta do something. His arm starts to ache, like oh God. Why is Jamie always taking a piss when stuff happens to him?
Yeah, like Brianna in the I can't remember if it's the same in the book, but
yes, he's taking a piss on a tree in the book versus an alley wall. But yes. And then isn't John taking a piss when Jamie comes back from the island over by the prison?
In the show it is. In the books he was taking a shit. I distinctly remember that. I don't why. Like I appreciate the realism of the bodily functions, but we don't have to spend so much time focusing on them exactly.
Speaking of realism, I was going to say when Ash was mentioning how they could have included that scene about where Jamie and Claire talk about John, if they wanted to be historically accurate, they could have also included the scene before that where Claire was picking the lice out of Jamie's hair.
Lovely.
I mean,
I'm just saying it's for the, you know, it's for the historical accuracy.
I don't think we really want any of these shows completely historically accurate.
I mean,
no one would have any teeth.
Except Claire and Jamie, because she makes him take care of his teeth.
Well, that was a fun in the book too. They're talking about vitamin C, like right before they start talking about John, they're talking about like how to prevent scurvy. And it's like, that's something that gets brought up later again with John, because he explains to John in Ardsmuir how to not get scurvy. And John's like, yeah, that's stupid. And it's like, John, shut up. For one time, Jamie's right.
Oh God, John thinks he's from like outer space when Jamie said, he's like, why would you ever want to eat that?
It's what the food eats. What are you doing?
I still feel like John probably forever just eats it like really angrily.
That's how I always picture Jamie eating it. Yeah. Like just like begrudgingly eating his vegetables because Claire told him to.
It's like that scene in Parks and Rec. I don't know if either of you have seen it, but like Ron Swanson has to eat a banana and he like puts it in a hamburger.
Or when he's at Chris, I was just thinking of when he was at Chris Traeger's house and Chris Traeger's like salad and Ron's like, no, I am not a rabbit.
Yeah, I don't eat. That's he's the food like, my food eats.
Yeah, yes.
That's Jamie.
Oh God, it always comes back to that. I keep, you know, always coming back to Ron Swanson. There's something there. There's something happening there.
Maybe someday I'll watch it. Probably not, but maybe.
I have to tell you, I'm actually watching it again right now. And mostly I've seen it so many times. It's like mostly kind of background, but like I think every time I watch it, it gets better. I was talking to my friend about it and it's like when you go back now and watch The Office, like it's still funny, but like you cringe at some of the stuff like, ooh, you know, that's like, ooh, we would not do that now. But Parks and Rec is never like that. It's just funny and it does running jokes like really well. And the characters are so good. It's just, it's a classic. It's a classic.
It's one of my favorite shows.
I have no idea if I'll ever have the spoons to spare for it. It would seem that the only shows I'm getting into lately are just gut-wrenching Interview with a Vampire.
Maybe you could spare some spoons if you don't watch all of those gut-wrenching shows sometimes.
I mean, it's not a lot of them. It's just the same one over and over again. I'm still obsessed. The Chokehold.
We did finish, me and my husband.
We're going to need to do a compare and contrast episode.
I know.
Interview with a Vampire. How, these are the scenes that we need in the John spinoff that I'm going to force them to make.
Yes. Absolutely.
Like whoever like is the showrunners of Interview with a Vampire need to head over to that to us.
Seriously, please God, sell that series to AMC. Let Roland do it. It'll be fine. Sam Reed, Stefan von Nomsen. I'm sold.
Oh please, yes. Hello. Oh.
Might have to exercise. We'll stop, but it's okay.
Well, and then my husband pointed out, which I hadn't. I knew I recognized Louis from somewhere, but I couldn't remember. And then he's like, yeah, he's on Game of Thrones. And I was like, oh my God. And I loved his character on Game of Thrones too. So
this is a good Outlander podcast.
Right. We talk about John and then other shit, but not actually Outlander. I will say something else about Outlander and John, because I found that kind of interesting that he used his lesser title when he said who he was and acted... Yeah. The way he introduced himself, he acted like Gerard is still alive because he said the second son of Viscount Milton. So that was actually really smart of him to conceal the leadership, the real leadership of Hell's Regiment and who he actually is, made him a lower value target. But then he sang like a canary, bless his heart. But, you know,
he's trying to save his future wife.
Yes.
Leave him alone.
Well, and he uses the name William instead of John, which, the layers of irony.
I don't know that that's layers of irony. I think it's the names repeat themselves in books.
The names repeat themselves so much, but we like to pretend.
So much.
Like my strong and belief you'll never talk me out of that Percy is Claire's like great-great-grandfather.
Oh yeah, totally believe it. Yeah. I'm with you 100%.
Anything else we want to talk about the episode specifically? Did we miss some stuff? I mean, we can keep going on and on about John for all I care.
I know.
I'm so glad. I'm so freaking glad we're finally here.
Oh, and now it's like I can almost taste season three. I did kind of just add the thought that, which we kind of talked about already, that when John says, I owe you my life, he like really took that to heart. Like,
okay. The freaking, they're fictional. Fuck it. Don't care. The hard eyes go in between them in that moment. I know I'm not making that shit up.
That's what I'm saying. We needed more of that. We needed extended so longing glances.
If like anything, it's like the feeling that like of you're meeting someone that's going to be an incredibly significant person in your life. And like they yes. don't realize that, but like for the viewers and stuff and for the story, I think, you know, to kind of dwell on the fact a little bit longer that like this is the second most important, like most important person that Jamie will have in his life.
Yeah.
And the person like closest to him besides Claire, and who will experience a part of his life, years and years of his life that Claire will never know and will never be a part of. And this is going to be the father of his child, all of these things that, you know, you don't, that yes, the characters don't know, but would feel kind of to have more gravity in that moment, like would have been cool just because it, that is the reality that you're looking at this person that is incredibly important to you and you don't realize it.
And then Jamie ironically says, when John says, when I see you again, I will discharge that debt and then I will kill you. And Jamie's like, well, then I hope we do not ever see each other again. It's like, oh, Jamie, you sweet summer child.
You have no idea how much more you're going to see him. Including when he's not there and you're having sex with Claire and you're freaking out about it. It's okay. It's a word for it. God damn.
One time I found this image of like two trees, like completely just like tangled up. And I was like, oh, look, it's the Fraser and Gray family trees. Like they started tangling at the bottom and then like the branches were all like tangled with each other.
Yeah, we should. I forgot to throw in. This is all. He's going to be your wife, Claire's future husband, the future father of your child, and also engaged to your daughter. So that's fun too.
Oh God, families! I can't.
Poor William. William does not have a family tree. He has family kudzu. It destroys everything it touches. It can grow 2 feet a day, and it's really a tangled mess of shit. And that's, tell me that's not William's family.
Poor William.
Poor kid. No chance for a normal life. His fathers are disasters.
Yeah. It just always makes me think, like, whenever people, like, are critical of William, and I'm like, do you know who his fathers are?
Plural, yes.
I really like that the guy who's playing William in the upcoming season, he very much looks like Jamie, but he also has like, he does reflect John a little bit too. It's kind of,
yeah,
it's a nice balance, you know, because in my mind, he is their biological son and I will not be taking any opinions on that.
You're not wrong.
I really hope that they add, like, have him, like, he looks like Jamie a lot, but then also has, like, John's mannerisms and a lot of John's attitude as well. So it just has that perfect, like, mix. I can't wait to just, I want to see, like, all, I don't know. I don't think that this is, I can't remember, but, like, I don't think there's any reason that they'd all three be on screen together, but at this point, but I would appreciate that.
Well, there's one. There's one.
There?
I think they were just filming it like last week or the week before. So.
I haven't been paying attention, but that's exciting.
When Jamie comes back from the dead, it's William. It's William and his men who's chasing Jamie into John's house.
Can you imagine though, like when we get the John and Claire stuff, like if they don't give me good John and Claire stuff, I'm gonna be so mad.
I'm suing for damages.
David Barry has a nudity clause. I need them to cash it in.
Okay, listen. They're already on my shit list for not doing the kiss.
Yeah. Oh. And
either time.
You cannot even begin to go into how many nights of sleep I've lost over that. If they do not do the John and Claire stuff well, I will be irreparably damaged and I will be suing.
Like, I will be so mad if they I have a fear that they're going to cut that, the sex, because I feel like in the books, all of that ties into what is really more absent in the show, which is Jamie's bisexuality is less, other than the chemistry that Sam and David put into the role that they play. There's so much more of it because they kiss twice in the books and all these things. Mm-hmm. There's much more of of that element to it in the books that they've removed from the show, where Jamie's a lot more comfortable with John in the show because there isn't that same tension of I'm in love with this person and I don't know how to process that. And that's kind of absent from the show in a lot of ways, where it's almost more fun. You know, you can kind of see that in the wedding, when he's messing with John and the wedding, Jocasta's wedding. Oh, look at all these girls that want to dance with you and that kind of
thing.
Oh,
yeah.
I feel like there's just that humor that's not in the books as much because Jamie is uncomfortable because there's actual romantic, in the text, a lot of of that romantic stuff coming from Jamie's side, not just John's. And so Jamie and Claire, no, I'm not speaking correctly. I'm sorry. John and Claire. This is a tangle, like we said, but John and Claire, when they get together, then that comes up later, of course. And it's the anger that he has cannot exist based solely on Jamie being mad about him having sex with Claire. It just doesn't make any sense.
That's true. Oh. That's a good point.
He would not be that angry. They both thought he was dead. It doesn't matter. He knows that John doesn't actually, he's not at risk of losing Claire to John. He knows that. So it just doesn't make any sense without that extra layer.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point.
Once again, there is no straight explanation for anything Jamie does in conjunction to John in particular. I've asked straight people. It does not pass the test.
I'm just saying, if they do it where, they actually have Sam with them, and it's, Claire's envisioning Jamie, John's envisioning Jamie, so we actually get to see John's fantasy and get to see them kissing and whatever. I mean, that is,
it's perfect.
I know they probably already filmed it, but I just need them to let me watch it and then refilm it if I need to.
I know. I'm so worried that they will literally not. That's exactly how they need to do it. I'm worried they won't even do it at all.
Yeah.
Because yeah. They'll just like they did with the kiss between John and Jane, where they're like, well, we didn't build up that relationship enough, which is, it's partially true because they took the entire thing that he does with John and condensed it down to one episode.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever. It still would have made perfect sense, whatever.
You know, there's also in the books, Claire is so petty and frosty with John until about that point. And now that, because good dick fixes a lot of things, now she's team John. So I can see where that maybe wouldn't track in the show. I was all excited for this, and now I'm fucking worried about it.
Because here's the other thing, too, is in the show, she gets her I'm not going to be mad at John anymore thing pretty much from the one where they come to the ridge and she treats him for measles. And that really seems to be the moment in the show where she's because in the show, she doesn't know about John and Jamie's kiss until that moment. And I hate the way they do it in the show because in the books, John's admission of their kiss is not him being feverish and being had Jamie. And it's not any of it. He does it as a way to protect Jamie after she sees them kissing in Jamaica.
Yeah.
And taking that away and making it this petty thing that he does because either he's just, either way you want to look at whether he's being petty or he's delirious from fever or both or whatever. It's in the books, it is a sacrifice almost to tell this story that if she isn't who she is and is gonna could say something about what he told her and she saw something, And so he takes a huge risk saying something to her about it and putting all of the blame on himself and not on Jaime, which Jaime was the one that kisses him, but whatever. In both times.
Both times. Jaime is the kisser. Both times.
All John has ever done is like put his hand on Jaime. That is it. That's the only thing. And immediately remove
right?
it.
Right?
But you're right. John explaining that to Claire in the books. We're in season three. Who fucking cares? We'll talk about it again then too. John explaining that to Claire could have had horrific consequences. It could have been the end of his life. It could have ruined mm-hmm. Isabel. It could have ruined William. It was a very high risk maneuver. Why would he do that if she didn't have very good evidence and reason to be concerned?
Right. Exactly.
But again, all this is taken out of the show. So, and she's already fine with John by the time, you know, by the time that this all rolls around. So I don't know how they'll play it. Like, it's an easy choice for them to just be like, hey, let's get married. That seems smart. Or like,
yeah,
because they already seem like friends in the show.
Yeah.
It's just such an emotionally charged part of the book. I do like the way they do it. I do like the way it was done in the book where we know before it happens that Jaime is actually still alive.
Yeah.
And then John rushing in going, you will marry me today? Like, oh boy. Hang on, let me go get popcorn. This is going to be fun. Like, because you know it's coming in this whole time. It's just like you're watching the train just keep wrecking itself.
Well, yeah, and just especially given the way they are in the books and how much trauma it does bring to, it's really like the second, it's sort of in a way the completion of the scene in Brotherhood of the Blade when John, like what happens at the end when Jaime actually physically attacks John, which he like almost does in the barn in Brotherhood of the Blade, but doesn't. And then John leaves. It's like, it finally concludes that never happened then. It should have been something else that happened instead, but you know. I don't write books.
I could daydream about where this episode should go. 4 days.
You know what they're going to have to do to create like all this tension? They're just going to have John and Jaime kiss early on in the season.
There you go.
To rekindle Claire's anger, to kind of recreate all this stuff that they've, you know, kind of whitewashed over.
There you go. Or they'll just like retcon everything and be like, we've been in a false memory this entire time. Here's the truth. Jaime couldn't like reconcile what really happened. So
surprise, unreliable narrator.
They'll do a flashback and they'll actually kiss at Hellwater.
Well, y'all will just have to come to my funeral because I'll drop dead.
Like, here's the rest of that scene. They shake hands and then like Jaime pulls him in and is like,
oh.
I maintain that they have such good chemistry that it would have looked weird if they didn't fuck in the woods, if they had kissed. It would not have made any sense for it to just be a kiss and then Jaime runs off. It wouldn't have made a lick of sense. Will not convince me otherwise.
God bless Sam and David.
I know. It would have just been, if they should have just let it be what the books were at least, but I was on that one thing. I watched the show without knowing anything about the books at the time and like later finding, and I looked up like John Jaime because I was like, you know, I was looking for fic and instead found the real kiss from the books and I was so mad.
What? I just remember looking something up like, do Claire and John, and then it fills out get married and I'm like,
What?
I think, I mean, I was probably on like the third or fourth book at the time. And I was like, what? Hold up. Now I gotta get to this part.
Time out. What?
It's gonna throw a lot of people who don't know anything about the books and are just watching the show. And then it's like, oh, especially if they actually do the whole thing.
I will feed off the tears of the people that are like, mad about it. I can't wait.
I am fully ready to be just Chief Petty Officer Pan the whole time. Just like, yeah, haters.
about it being in the book at all, too. Like, I've seen a lot of, like, of angry people about
that
storyline. So
I've seen a lot of people do, like, Olympic-level mental gymnastics to explain some of the shit that's in the books, too, in a way that is not gay. And you can't, because there is no straight reason for
there's
it.
There's no straight explanation.
And something else I was thinking about, like, in terms of John and, like, his relationship with Jamie, like, John exists, like, the way he kind of moves through the world, the way that Jamie does, where it's, like, this sense of, like, he's very, like, the way that he has to repay his debt, like we talked about earlier, where it's, like, okay, he made this debt of honor to Jamie, and now he basically is just giving his entire life over to the Frasers forever. And that's kind of the way he's interpreted, like, I owe you something, and then, like, he forever does the honorable thing with them, even though they don't give that back to him in return. Like, it is not an equal exchange in their relationship.
Yeah.
I feel like some of that comes from, like, the way that he processes the homophobia of the time. Like, he overcompensates by being trying to be perfect in every other way.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree.
Where I feel like, in my intention, I don't know, but that seemed like the exact opposite of the way that Black Jack Randall then processes the homophobia of his time, where the world's going to see him, like, regardless of anything else that's true about what would be true about him, if he's a gay man in that world, you're going to be seen as evil. And a way to process that is to go, well, if I'm already a monster, why am I not a monster? Why not be
right?
Whereas the way John processes it is like, I've got this thing about myself the world says is not right. And even though he doesn't really, I think he gets to the point in his life where that's not at least consciously how he, like, he doesn't feel bad about himself consciously. It's still part, like, a huge part of the way it's going to be viewed. And so I feel like he overcompensates by having, he cannot do the wrong thing because he wants to be a good person. And he's always going to have to overcompensate for the fact that he's got this thing about him that the world sees as wrong.
Yeah. Jack Randall's just like, oh, you think I'm a deviant? Hold my beer.
Like, yeah, John and Blackjack as narrative foils is always a good kind of, not, I don't know about good, but you know what I mean. Interesting
concept.
We'll go with interesting.
Well, the cool thing is that despite all of John's fears of being found out and everything else, he never seems ashamed, right? Like, he obviously has to hide it, but he never seems like ashamed of himself for being the way he is, where I get the feeling that Black Jack Randall is actually deeply ashamed of who he is. And that's why he sort of embraces that deviant side of him or whatever, and just sort of becomes, like you said, becomes the monster that they think he is.
Yeah. And I think that it could, like, that lack, and maybe it is that lack of shame that is the main difference, and that allows, like, John not to be eaten alive by the homophobia of the time and, like, turned into something that he isn't, because he doesn't feel that same shame that, for whatever reason, that he doesn't feel it the same way that a lot of, like, that maybe Jack Randall does and a lot of other people at the time would. I mean, when you, in Brotherhood of the Blade, he talks to Percy about, like, what he feels about it and how he, and yeah, it doesn't come across, there's not really shame that there's, he very much has a, this is the way that, which, that I was made, and there's really not anything to be done about it, which I think is one of the reasons, like, I love a bi John, like, a bi John in the way that Jamie is bi, but, like, flipped and opposite.
Yes.
And so John, obviously, way more commonly attracted to men. And I think that he's built a lot of his personality around that and around the idea that it is, which is not the idea of the time, which is, this is the way that I was made and there's nothing I can do about it. So I don't have a choice. Like, I'm not choosing to do this thing. It is just what it is. And it's just who I am. And, like, that's a modern concept that he understands, like, that he has, that isn't the obviously the narrative of the time. And I think that he uses that if it comes, if he's attracted to a woman, if it comes up against that, it's, it might make him question, like, am I doing the thing? Is this actually a choice? Am I wrong about this reality? But it's like, no, you're not wrong at all. It's just people can be attracted to, you know, everyone. And, but I think that that could be a little bit of the reason that, cause he, that he does, you know, seem to have some attraction to women and that kind of thing. But he's built his narrative around, I was born this way, and hasn't figured out quite how those things fit together.
Yeah, I like recently in some interview or fan video, I don't even remember what it was. It might have been at a con. Somebody asked David Barry about John being gay. And I can't remember how the question was worded, but David Barry said, I think he said something like, I think queer is a better label for Lord John. And I kind of like that. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's what I'm going with.
Okay, that's interesting to me. And here's why. And I'm going to be whatever. But I think, I feel like, why would that be David's perspective? And so to me, that bodes well for a John Claire scene.
Yes.
What, he has not read the books as far as I know. And I don't think he's read the Lord John books either. I feel like he mentioned that in one of the like things. I don't know. I could be wrong. But I feel like that bodes well because for them actually doing something with that, because in the show, I feel like he's often set up and that's just kind of the really basic way of understanding John's character is to think this is a gay man and you have to kind of like, so I feel like he's had some kind of, either he has ended up reading the books and that come to that conclusion, or he's had a conversation with Diana maybe, or with the producers of the show or whatever, that said like, hey, there's more to John's character than, or not more, but you know, something that's like his sexuality might be more complex than on the surface we seem to think it is.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to what you said, Ash, about John really seems to understand that he's born this way, that his sexuality is not a choice. And I think that Jamie doesn't get that. And I think that generally speaking, John doesn't expect people to really process that the same way that he does. I think he understands that that is a different way of looking at it. And I don't think it bothers him that much, except when it comes from Jamie. It really deeply hurts him when it comes from Jamie.
Yeah. And Jamie definitely doesn't understand that I don't, that's not his concept of it at all. And I think, you know, because that's not his concept of it, that's one of the reasons that he's so like, I just will choose otherwise and not, and maybe, you know, I think that's something, you know, that sometimes as, you know, like as he's a closeted bisexual man, like being able to say like, well, I can love women. And like when he talks to John about it in Brotherhood of the Blade, I believe he says something like, you know, just because you can't like have these relationships with a woman, and John's right. Like, that's not the case. And like, he thinks that that's what it is. And right. It's like, that's not, so Jamie can kind of erase that from his mind as an issue because he goes, well, I can be with Claire, but then John, and then like, well, when he's like, I'm going to marry Isabel, and Jamie's like, how can you do that? And it's like, sir.
Well, and I think that's a big thing is that Jamie kind of, he sees queerness as a weakness in among other things. And yeah, he believes that it's like basically if you are so deviant or whatever that you can't, or you aren't manly enough or whatever to be with a woman, then you end up being with men, which, hello, that's way manlier. But okay. In my opinion, that's kind of a weird take that Jamie has.
And I wonder if in a way that's one of the reasons that he is bothered. Like, I mean, among like a huge tower of reasons that he is bothered by John and Claire, like having sex when they're married, is because he kind of rests his belief on the fact that like queer people are the way that they are because they can't. Like,
right.
So if, because he can, with like, and he does love Claire, have like, attraction to women, then that means he can't be the same thing that John is. But if John can also do those things, then that means that he can.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that a lot. That's a good point.
The mental hoops this dude will jump through to maintain his personal sense of identity, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if that's the right word for it. But I think, where did this idea come? Actually, Ash, I think you put this idea into my head a couple of years ago. I think it's while we were writing Whatever It Costs, talking about Jamie being afraid of seeing Blackjack in himself.
Yeah.
When he looks at his feelings for John.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too.
And would this be a good point to point out once again that John has had sex with more women than Jamie has? By a lot.
I love that when Jen was taking down that homophobe in her comments, she like pointed that out. She's like, just so you know, canonically, John has had sex with more women than Jamie.
5 on the low end. That was fun math.
I think too, I just want to point out that it's kind of sad that as a whole, our thinking on, you know, homosexuality and overall queerness and, you know, not for everybody, for most people, like they get it now. Like they're like, okay, you know, even people that aren't like, you know, yay, the gays, like, yeah, like most people support same-sex marriage, like they get it. But like, we're not very much further along as a society in our understanding of bisexuality.
No.
I mean, biphobia is such a huge thing, and it come in even worse is that often the call is coming from inside the house. It's a concept that people still struggle to wrap their heads around. So we have to kind of, you know, give Jamie a little leeway here, because there's still people that can't, they just can't wrap their heads around the concept of being attracted to both genders. And in a way, I can understand why, because if you are only ever attracted to one gender, then it probably is hard to conceive of how you could possibly be attracted to both, or any, you know, not to be binary about it. I mean, I see the perspective, I don't think it's an excuse, because like so many other things that we don't understand, you don't have to understand it. You just have to accept that's the way it is for some people, and be like, okay, I will never fully understand the concept, because I will never live the concept, but you do you, you know? And yeah, so that's it. I think it's also, not to go too far down a rabbit hole, but I think it's also why, you know, so many people are still anti-trans, because they can't possibly perceive of how you could not feel like you are, your gender doesn't match your biological sex. But again, you don't have to understand it. It doesn't matter if you understand it. You just have to accept that there are things in this life that are not going to be your lived experience, but it's okay for other people to have it as their lived experience. So get off my soapbox.
If people could just stop being assholes, that'd be great.
Yeah, that would just be great.
I feel like, and that's one of the reasons, like, I think I'm particularly drawn to, like, to the story of John and Jamie, and especially that the concept that they're both bisexual, because it isn't something we see a lot or portrayed in a realistic way. And I feel like it's a conversation that, like you said, this is a story written about the 1700s. But it's a conversation that we need to have today about what, in story, I think is the best way to have a lot of those conversations, because we just have, as humans, it's the way that we under, like, I think the way we process information the best is through story. And yeah. to sort of see these characters and what they go through and how they see the world and what that can mean for us, I think is what really draws, like, me to them. And I just, like I said, I think it's an important conversation to have. What does it mean to be bisexual? What does it mean to have these feelings, and especially in a world and surrounded by a world that doesn't understand? And how do you find your own self?
Well, it's like when I read Red, White, and Royal Blue, for example, you read that book and it doesn't matter. Like, I feel like anybody who loves a good love story could read that book and just be like, oh, okay, now I get it, because I love these two, right? Like, yeah. You know, just because you just fall in love with the love story, and that's kind of like, you can just kind of cease to forget about trying to wrap your head about a concept you might never possibly completely understand, and just be like, oh, like, this is just such a cute love story, and they're just such good characters, and I'm going to root for them, you know?
I mean, exposure to people who are different is like the best way to change people's minds. And sometimes we don't get that exposure from our real life. And story becomes the way that we get exposure to stories that are not like our own. And, you know, I think that or stories that are like our own that don't necessarily get told very often, like John and Jamie's story that, you know, we may really relate to. And it's not something that gets talked about pretty much ever. So, and I would say probably even more so John's side of the story, at least from, like, there tends to be a, in the, like, the bisexual community in the world, like, a concept that at the end of the day, everyone's really attracted to men. Like, if you're if you're a bisexual man, you're really gay. If you're a bisexual woman, you're really straight. Like, that tends to be like the false stereotype that's there. So I feel like John's half of it doesn't often get told, where it's like his identity is so tied up in and I think in a good way, in a sense that, like, he knows who he is, but there's this other element of it that is confusing, because what does it, just like with Jamie, what does it do to his identity if it's not exactly what he thought it was? And that is something that real people today, you know, face all the time, when you have an idea of yourself and then it gets, something in your life, you know, conflicts with that concept that you've built of who you are. How do you rebuild yourself to, you know, to incorporate what you didn't know was there?
Yeah.
Or not even knowing that it's an option to be attracted to more than one gender.
Right. Yeah.
That's not something that would have been common knowledge for them.
I mean, I grew up in the 90s. You know, I was born in the 80s, grew up in the 90s, and nobody ever told me it was an option. I don't think I knew it was an option until like sometime in my 20s, you know?
I almost feel like they had a better concept of that back then, because it was not 100% accurate concept by any means, but because they had the concept of it being a choice, there was some concept of you could, like, experience attraction to this person, but then not do it because you weren't supposed to do it, but you could be experiencing this attraction. And I feel like we lost that. Like, they did have, there was a kernel of truth in that they had back then, not the choice part, but the fact that some people would be presented with a choice. Not that nobody is presented with a choice, which became kind of the prevailing concept that we all grew up with, which was, it's one or the other, you're born that way. You know, even people who are pretty open-minded, that was kind of and the way that a lot of support came for being gay was around the support of, well, you can't be mad at someone for something they didn't choose.
Right.
And so that was what we grew up with, whereas it was like flipped back then. And they did have the concept of, like, I mean, like Jamie talks about, like, in the books, he's like, tells Claire, like, you know what happens in prison and stuff. And she's like, okay. he's being so weird that entire, like, time, trying to, like, I don't even know when you'd have, I guess that's a season 3 discussion, but he seems to recognize that people can do that, and he doesn't see that as like automatic, like, oh, well, if they do that, then they're automatically queer. They were just doing, making, they were just doing an action.
Yeah.
If you ever want to go down a fun rabbit hole, look into like the Masons and like other like men's society clubs or whatever you want to call it, like them. Because there were very many of them that were either absolutely known that men went to these things and like jerked off in the, like they all sat around and jerked off together, or like, you know, experimented with sex toys and things like that. And it was seen as a perfectly normal, straight thing to do, to sit in a room with other men and pleasure themselves and experiment with sex toys. And that was just, it was fine because it was a manly thing. It was a men's thing. I think that also could probably contributed to the idea that you could be straight, but also, you know, enjoy the company of men in some very non-straight ways. And that was okay because it was a man thing.
It's not gay if it's an orgy.
Right. It's not gay if it's in a three-way. I'll just, since we've kind of jumped around different fandoms anyways this episode, I'll just say that one of the reasons that this is kind of a, it's timely that we're talking about this, because my other fandom, 911 Lone Star, there are two characters on the show that are gay men. They're a couple, and they're a fan favorite. The man who plays one of them is a gay man in real life. And then the other one came out as bisexual a couple years ago. But he's been, since before that, he's been in a long-term relationship with a woman. And she actually helped him come out and, you know, really sort of helped him be okay with that side of himself. And he's very in love with her. And he just announced a couple weeks ago that they got married back in August. And he got a lot of love, but he also got a lot of hate. He was accused of making it harder for other gay men to be gay men. He was accused of faking his bisexuality for publicity and to legitimize himself playing a gay character on a show. It was just, to some people, it was just a huge betrayal that he would marry a woman. And he's, and it's like, it means either or, guys, like, right. Get with the picture. And it was a really, it was a very gross week or so. To be watching the comments and things like that. Pretty ugly. And
yeah.
It just is like, wow. And again, it's like mostly the people that were saying these things to him seemed to be part of the LGBTQIA plus community and just kind of felt betrayed by him. Like coming out as bisexual meant he was going to like leave his long-term girlfriend to marry a man because that's what he's supposed to do. I even saw someone say that this made no sense, that in Hollywood, men who are actually gay say they are bisexual to like kind of soften the blow. And I'm like, literally nobody in the history of ever has done that.
Yeah, like that's,
people
that's,
don't
know.
That doesn't even make sense. But anyway,
and especially it's not going to soften the blow in the, for like, I don't think it is in general, regardless of your gender, but like for men, like, and that's exactly what I had said. Like that's, I haven't watched all of 911 Lone Star, but I've watched, like, I think I watched the maybe first two seasons. I did not know that about like the characters, but, like the fact that that's like what we're dealing with now today, like we said, like mm-hmm. our concept on bisexuality is not much better than yeah. it was then. And so it's like, and in some ways it could even be worse, because it generally, I absolutely cannot stand. First of all, I don't think it matters who plays what character when it comes to like sexuality. I think it matters when it comes to gender identity. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that matters. But I don't think it doesn't matter. I just don't think it matters, because sometimes then you're going to be asking people to out themselves, or you can't have these roles unless you out yourself. And so it's like, clearly it's not just like people be like, they're doing it for publicity and for all this. I'm like, you're not paying any attention to what's really good. You're living in your insane bubble that you've created on the internet, where everything is just safe and perfect in the world for people who are queer. And that's not the reality. Right. Like,
besides the fact that as a bisexual man who was in a long-term relationship with a woman, he could have just never come out, and like, he would have never had to go through some of the stuff he's going through now. Like, he could have just been like, well, it doesn't matter. But I mean, as someone who is also, I'm married to a man and all of that, and I'm also bisexual and I've lived most of my life as, you know, seemingly straight. Like, I do understand where you get to the point where it's like, you can't like hold it in anymore. And I think that's what happened for him. But like, people just they don't understand that like, why would anybody come out as bisexual or gay or anything like that if they weren't? Why would they put themselves through that?
Yeah. It's like, only in your tiny bubble that you've created is that a good thing. Literally, in the rest of the world, you pay consequences for it.
Yep.
Like, horrible and unfair as that is, it's only in the internet, like your tiny part of not even the internet at large, the tiny bubble that you have created, is it a good thing? And like, real people can't queer bait you. Like, I sure can. But like, just because you've decided that somebody is queer or whatever, they don't owe that information to you, because there are real world consequences. So, I mean, people who know my handle are going to know that I come from people who like knew me from before, like I started writing with like this name and stuff for like Dan and Phil fandom. So, and at the time that I was writing for them, they were not out as gay, and they are now. But it was like, so that was a big part of like people talking about that, is like, whether or not they owed information to the people that they were watching. Like, was it queer baiting if they weren't queer, but then everyone was assuming that they were, and they never would say, like, you know, whatever. And so but what is interesting is like, back when I was writing for them, they were going on a tour and they were going to Singapore, which it's illegal to be. And people were talking about like, maybe they're going to come out or whatever, like at the time of this tour. And then other people were saying, they're not going to come out, they're going to Singapore. And Dan recently said, like, cause he's on tour just like by himself this time. And he can't go to Singapore now because he'd be promoting the gay lifestyle. And so it's like, there are real world consequences to coming out. It's not just like, I'm doing this for fun. Like, there are real world consequences and to getting rid of hurting other opportunities if you are to say these things, if you didn't mean them, like, you pay a price.
Well, and it just goes back to part of the idea that a lot of straight people who are not allies thinking that gay people are just like doing it for attention, right? And you can tell that in the way that they say things like, oh, I don't need my nose rubbed in it, you know, that type of thing. Like, they're not doing this for attention. They're like, get over yourself.
It's like, literally not about you, Karen.
Just don't get it. As you probably already know this, but you know that Brian Michael Smith, who plays Paul on 911 Lone Star, he's a trans man playing a trans man. And he actually just got into People magazine as one of the sexiest men alive. And I was just like,
I did not know that. I knew about him, like, but I did not know that. That's really cool.
Yeah, they did like a little separate like thing with like sexiest firefighters and it was all fictional firefighters because there's so many firefighter shows now. And I just thought like, wow, that's good for People magazine for just putting that out there. Like, and that shows me how far we've come in that respect for the trans community, you know, in the last however many years.
Yeah. It's always both. Like whenever you make steps forward, there's backlash to that. So it's like you have things like that. And then you have all the bills that are coming out. That's like, you know, not to like be political or anything, but you know, you have at any time you make there's steps forward where society is saying, okay, we're going to change the way we handle whatever the way we've been handling a specific group of people for the longest time, you know, then other people are going to lose their minds. So this is, again, we've done a really good Outlander podcast.
Yes, it's excellent. And Pan's probably twitching right now because this is creeping up on 2 hours.
You know what though? It's November. This is going to air in January. I have lots of time to edit.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, I'm watching that clock going, it's okay. There was a break for a few minutes at least. It's fine. It's fine. This was actually a really good conversation. I have thoroughly enjoyed it.
You can probably cut out one of my rambles. Like into
but once again, something. I'm going to leave the thing in where we say I'm going to cut something so everybody wonders if I cut something. Not that I'll remember what I cut.
I probably won't even notice anyways.
Fine.
No, we ended up having a conversation.
Yeah, it's a good conversation. I've enjoyed it. I can steer us back to the episode very unceremoniously and just ask this question. Do you guys have anything about this episode that just made no sense to you other than what we've already talked about?
No, not really. I nothing that we haven't mentioned.
No, I feel like we covered it.
I have one thing.
Okay.
That flashback forward to World War II. I have to call epic bullshit that Private Lucas is from Texarkana. There is no way with that lack of accent he's from Texarkana. I have been to Texarkana. It is Hick Central. I say that with affection. I am also from the South and I'm letting my twang come out because there's no way you just slap on the word pop instead of dad and now you're from Texarkana. No, ma'am.
Oh, I never thought of it, but then when I read your comment, I was like, oh, totally. Like, you wouldn't even be able to understand him. Like, seriously. Mm-mm. And it's no offense to, again, to people from that area, but their accents are very,
it's specific.
It's almost to the point where it's like a different dialect. And it's very hard to understand. And yeah.
So for our overseas listeners or anyone who just has never been to Texarkana, it is it's a city that straddles the border of Arkansas and Texas. Clever, right? And so half of it is Arkansas and half of it is Texas, which is a weird shift when you cross over into Texas and suddenly there's roadkill again. Because in Texas, it's specifically illegal to eat roadkill, but that's not the case in Arkansas. I'm not making that up. That's true. True story. But yeah, it's a very interesting city. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like it before or since. But anyway, yeah. No, Private Lucas is not from Texarkana.
We do find out where Jesus H. Roosevelt Christ comes from.
Yes. Thank God that mystery is solved.
It will be said about 1 million times in the canon, in fic, at every opportunity, even when it doesn't make sense.
Okay. And then you will start to say it yourself.
And if you haven't yet, run. Beth, do you want to be horrified? I don't know if I have one in me. I didn't write anything
I think
down.
I'm pretty tired.
You don't want to be horrified?
No, let's not do horrified. I'm already horrified by the biphobia that we talked about today. So let's leave it at that.
So
how's that?
So mentioning that there may be, I kind of smelled some hate bang tension between Marta and Dougal. This is not the time.
No, please, God, never. Oh, just never talk about that again.
Oh. Okay. Next week. Got it. I'll save it. Mark me.
Mark me.
Let's sneak that in for Ness. I'm really excited that we didn't have to write anything down for what's John up to for this week, yes, because we actually got to talk about John.
We know he's tied to a tree somewhere.
Poor kid.
The broken arm, having just met the two most important people in his life and having no idea. And then I can't imagine what it's like how he lives with what he did.
Not well.
Like, that would be rough. Like, you got a lot of people killed.
He didn't process it well. It was kind of alluded to a bit in the books, but they don't think it really goes into depth.
And then he's going to have to go deal with Hal, which is like, he probably wishes Jamie had killed him at that point.
I would like that scene.
definitely.
Hector's nice to him, though, about it. We know that.
Yeah.
Well, I think this brings us to the fic rec. Ash, as our guest, you got to pick the fic this week.
I did. I picked one that me and you wrote together, which was about John and Claire, because I wanted to talk about John and Claire. And it's called What It Is to Love Her, that was John and Claire cheating on Jamie. So
I don't consider John Claire to be cheating.
Okay.
We tagged it as such. That was
we did, so
I think we also it was a stupid tag we put on there. It was like Scottish coitus interruptus.
I think I have it up. I can probably see what tags you put on there. Yes, that's exactly what you put on there. You did know, so it was you.
That was me.
I just love, at the most basic level, the irony of the fact that Jamie's two great loves of his life are both Sassenachs.
And he's so Scottish, but
yeah.
It's a fun one just to mess around with. Like, I always like when we were writing like those fics from that week. We were just like messing around with the expected stories.
That week was fun. It was just, it took us what, like 2 weeks or so to write all of those stories. We plowed through them pretty damn fast. I'm not sure how he did that. But yeah, so we spent a week and we posted 7 stories, one a day, and all of them kind of subverted some expectation, and we pissed some people off with one or two.
Yeah, that was kind of our concept going in, like, not necessarily how can we like kind of confront the expected and the things that people just like take for, like, this is the way it's supposed to be, even in fic, and if it's not, we're gonna laugh at it.
All right, well, Ash, thank you so much for joining us. I have loved talking to you.
Thank you
for having me. I hope that I can come back some other time and talk more about John.
Anytime you want. Like, I am thrilled.
Absolutely, me too.
All right, so that is it for us this week. Don't forget that we are on Twitter or Tumblr. If you'd like to send us a message, you can do that at Lord John Lander. We also have our WordPress, lordjohnlander.wordpress.com/contact-us, if you want to just send us a message. We don't have to say your name, but if you're mean, we will. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
If you're listening to this, it means you survived another episode of Lord John Lander. We'd love to hear from you on Twitter or Tumblr at Lord John Lander, or on our website at lordjohnlander.wordpress.com/contact-us.
All opinions expressed on the Lord John Lander podcast belong to us and are not affiliated with Outlander, Sony, Stars, and definitely 100% not with Diana Gabaldon.
This podcast is not suitable for children, immature adults, homophobes, anyone who takes fandom seriously, people who don't understand that the characters aren't real, people with sticks up their ass, people who hate fun, and people with no sense of humor. Do not try any of these hot takes at home. We are professionals.
And if you know us in real life, no, you don't.